This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not contain or replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, Australia. Welcome to My Millennial Money. I'm Glenn James and you are...
John Pidgeon.
And we are here today with a friend of the show, Rebecca Pritchard, and we're talking about the cost of a baby. So this is going to be a banger. I'm in for it. I'm strapped in because I'm having a heart attack already.
Yeah.
So Beck, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. Yeah, it's a ripper of a topic. So I'm really excited to lay into it.
Now, I do want to talk about our show partner, SunSuper, and thank you to SunSuper for getting behind the podcast. SunSuper have a strong and competitive investment performance. I actually looked, John, at the 30 June performance for the last, you know, 1, 3, 5, 7 years.
Yep.
And they do have a great track record.
I did hear that.
Yeah. And so I just on the whole super thing, and Beck, you could probably jump in here, like it's important to know when you're reviewing investment returns, because we're investing for more than 5 years, for more than 7 years, to a point we don't really care what the last 12 months is in a return. So what would you say to that, Beck?
Absolutely. You know, particularly we're talking to millennials here, we are investing probably 20 to 60 years for some of our money. We've got to think long term.
Yeah. So there's just a bit of a trick when you are comparing returns of funds, and as the commentary says, don't base past performance on future performance. Unless you're talking about old Glennie James over here and John Pidgeon, we've got a pretty good track record. Oh,
touch wood.
So thank you to SunSuper for supporting the podcast. You can go to sunsuper.com.au/M3. Beck, you've got a financial advice background. You're a financial advisor. And if anyone wants to check out Beck's vibe, you can find her on Instagram at...
RF Pritch.
RF Pritch, there you go.
Don't say that wrong,
yeah. Now, just a bit of an update. We are, this episode, if you're listening to this on the Tuesday it's released, we are recording it on the Thursday before, so this is going up straight away.
Hot.
Yeah, we've been doing this a bit lately.
Yeah, why?
So, well, because just we've been so busy. But what I'm going to do, just quickly before we get into it, is you might not know, My Millennial Money isn't the only podcast that we do. We've got My Millennial Property, which John steers that ship. We've got My Millennial Money Express, and I kind of just do face to cam, you know, 12-minute little powwows. We've got My Millennial Career, and Shell and Em, they talk about all things careers, and they're putting together season 2. So if you're after some inspiration with your career and what you're going through, there's a whole heap of good content there.
Awesome stuff.
There is also My Millennial Replay. So all the webinars that we do, you can jump onto the podcast for the replay. So you can listen to the webinars, first home buyer, mortgage broker, marketing for small business, getting more clients, that's on a podcast. And a lot of you might not know that we actually produce another podcast that's not money related, and that's called You to Me, You to You, You to Us. And it's a sexual health podcast.
Don't get involved.
No. And so that basically focuses on sexual and reproductive health. So could tie into if you don't want a baby, but we're about to talk about.
The cost of a baby might send you down to that podcast.
Yeah. So if you actually get a bit freaked out about the cost that Beck spent and what she's going through with her first child, you might want to listen to You to You, You to Me, You to Us.
Yes.
I might have said that around the wrong way.
Glad you're saying it.
But you will learn about contraception, sexual health, and Hannah, the doctor. She is amazing.
Cheers.
On today's episode, Glenn and John chat with Rebecca Pritchard.
Rebecca Pritchard.
Rebecca Pritchard.
Rebecca Pritchard, the mayoress of financial advice in Victoria.
About the cost of having her first child.
The cost of having a child will be different for everyone.
So please understand, Rebecca's story is exactly that, hers.
Glenn forgot to organise Asha for this intro, so you're listening to me, Rinelle Richards.
So you're listening to me, Daniel, M3 community member.
Potsy, M3 community member.
Emma, My Millennial Money podcast listener.
Shay, M3 community member.
long-time listener and first-time voiceover artist.
Matt Hawkins from Hobart, M3 community member, podcast listener, and all-round good guy.
Okay, so Beck, talk to us about your journey. You found out that you were pregnant, and you can share whether it was planned or unplanned. That's probably after the fact here, but you found out you were pregnant. Tell us the journey, and you thought, like, you've got a finance background. So was it like, oh, this is going to be wild, or like, I'm going to actually use this as a data gathering exercise, or I'm just interested anyway to see how much it would actually cost if we do this again? Talk to us about your logic behind the stuff that you've tracked.
Yeah, it wasn't my original intention, but I knew maybe 2 or 3 months into the process that I was spending in different ways than I had expected. And so then I went back to my bank statements and started tracking everything down and made a conscious effort to track through the rest of the pregnancy, because I mean, I was fascinated by it. And as somebody who's spoken about this over a number of years, and then to experience it myself, I thought, wow, this is really going to the next level. I didn't talk about, sorry, the pregnancy journey itself. So I felt pregnant, look, relatively easily, as far as, you know, the spectrum goes in terms of conceiving. But unfortunately, that wasn't a successful pregnancy. And so when my husband and I went through quite the roller coaster early on, from the highs of falling pregnant and then the gutting lows of loss, and then the financial kick in the face that comes with having to pay for that. So that was really unexpected, and something that professionally as well, over years of talking about family planning, was definitely a gap in the conversations that I'd had with my clients. So that really hit me for six and really solidified it, why I want to talk about this.
And it just talks to any subject about, there's only so much theory you can take before you actually get some practicality in it and go through it yourself, and you come from a different angle, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, one of my biggest takeaways from the whole experience in the last 18 months is that there are certain frameworks that exist for the average person, but very few people are the average person. And so it's around then taking that knowledge and tailoring it to what makes sense for you and your family.
Yeah, and I just want to jump in there and say, as a public service announcement, it's just another example that the amount of people that we interact with through life, you just never know what somebody's actually going through. No. Like, particularly being a gentleman like myself and many other gentlemen that are listening, don't know why I'm saying gentleman, but maybe because I'm being a bit serious, but, you know, as a male, I probably don't realize how many women have miscarriages and lose a child.
Yeah.
Where Beck could probably speak more so, like, as a woman, you're probably more aware of that in society itself.
You're right, but it is a hugely unspoken topic, and it's interesting you're talking about the reproductive health podcast that you have, because it's a taboo. It's a taboo to talk about sex. It's a taboo to talk about death. It's taboo to talk about money.
Yeah.
And in this specific area, all three of them are so bloody relevant and need to be on the table.
Yeah,
totally. And so just being open about them, and the statistics are about 1 in 3 pregnancies end in loss. So, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation perhaps for another day, but it is worth considering that not all roads to starting a family happen perfectly.
Yeah.
And certainly don't happen on the first try.
And while we're there, I guess, to give Hannah's podcast a plug, some of the topics that we've got here is there's an episode on the pill, episode on Marina, contraception overview, endometriosis, the Nuva ring. She covers a lot of the contraception if you don't want to start a family or have a child. And then she moves to some of the medical things like polycystic ovary syndrome, HIV and syphilis, the implanon, genital herpes, the pelvic floor, permanent and surgical contraception part one, permanent and surgical contraception part two, pain relief in labor part one, pain relief in labor part two. And I know that she's planning her second season, which talks, and I don't know if you've dealt with clients around this, Beck, but she's talking with a doctor who's in the whole IVF thing, but also freezing eggs.
Mm.
So that's going to be huge.
Yeah. And I mean, what I'm hearing from all of that, Glenn, is that it's a massive topic.
Totally.
That needs to, we need to take the covers off. So yeah. I'm really excited to listen to season two.
And you're right, Beck, about putting it on the table, just like money, just like sex, everything else. Like it's just taboo. It's under the carpet. And like, we went through the experience of miscarriage with my sister-in-law, and when it came, it was a shock for her and the family, but it was a shock for us because, like, oh, I've never heard of that happening before. But you're saying it's one in three, like it's just it should be spoken about, shouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think everyone can go through it in their own way, and I'm at a place now that I can talk about it without bursting into tears, and I do feel, you know, a sense of responsibility actually to share and to campaign for a more open conversation about this.
So yeah. Before we move on to the money side of things, my last kind of, and it's, I think it's great that we've ended up here in the conversation when, you know, 10 minutes ago we didn't even think we were talking about it. But Beck, if you were to, because there are thousands and thousands of people listening. If there was a lady going through a miscarriage at the moment or something like that, what would you say to her?
To both women and to men, because it's something that impacts a family, that you are not alone and there are resources available to help you. So to chat to your doctor, your GP, your obstetrician, to chat to your community and share what you're experiencing and reach out for help.
Mm.
Mm. And I would personally speak to the males in the situation because we can't even imagine what the female goes through emotionally in that process. Like, yes, it's a joint, it's occurred to both of us and the family, but it's happened to the female.
Mm.
It's a very different feeling and whole new set of emotions, isn't it?
Yeah, and the emotion is one side of it, but physical is a very important part for women to experience. And, you know, it speaks to the way that my pregnancy actually unfolded was completely driven by that experience at the get-go because it uncovered a bunch of issues that I just never thought I'd be never anticipated experiencing going through that.
Mm. So you were planning a family and you thought, well, let's get a family savings account happening.
How cliche financial advisor can you get?
I know.
When you make a major life decision, what do? You set up a bank account.
Totally, totally.
So did you practice what you preach?
Hell yeah, I did. And so, you know, my husband and I were investing for the children that we didn't have, you know, years before we actually were looking to start a family so that, you know, the money would be there at the right point in time. We had the bank account. It was pretty close to being full to what we wanted by the time we felt pregnant. And we'd also upgraded our health insurance because we had decided we wanted to go down the private road and served our waiting periods. So then we were good to go.
Mm, awesome.
And how much did you have in your savings account when Bub arrived?
By the time Bub arrived, we had about $2,000. So we had nicely eroded balance over time. So we started with about $14,000 and then realized a couple of months in that wasn't going to cut the mustard. And so we topped it up, and over the course of falling pregnant the first time to a couple of weeks postpartum with my son, it was about $17,500.
Yeah, wow.
Right.
Wow.
So, Beck, you started with 14. By the time Bub's come along, you had two remaining. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So if you had your time again, like, was that a shock as to how much you'd spent through that time prior to birth or not?
It was a shock in the sense of when you actually add it up, you go, oh my goodness, that's a lot of money. And particularly in my line of work, my brain can't help but go to all the places that I could spend $17,000 on elsewhere.
Yeah.
Realistically, like my partner and I were very diligent along the way, and very few things in there were frivolous or were not well considered. Right. So even though it added up to a pretty chunky number, I stand by most of those decisions.
Yeah, okay, because I suppose where I was going with that was, if you did have your time again and someone's listening there thinking, well, how much do I factor in? Are we going on the cheap for 12 grand? Is that standard 12 grand? Is it high-end 12 grand?
And one of the key determinants for working out what the number is for you, because it will be different for you, whoever's listening today, one of the massive determinants is public versus private.
Yeah.
And as a private patient, that contributed to probably a good $8,000 of both obstetrician and scans.
Right.
So that's a huge chunk of massive. That. And yeah, if you're going public, that comes out or is significantly reduced.
Yeah, so I think it's like loud and clear that you were in a good financial position, which means you didn't have any consumer debt, I would assume, and it means instead of paying $300 or $400 a month on repayments of crap, you were like, well, we can afford the luxury of doing things privately and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and we'd planned for that. So we had allowed within that money, we knew a massive chunk of it was going to those health expenses, and we were comfortable with that. That was a decision that we made. Keeping in mind, I would also add, because there's not really regulation on the private road, doctors can set their own prices. And so yeah. I would say my private expenses were probably middle of the road.
Yeah.
Statistically, you know, the average expense is a bit lower in that sort of $4,000 to $5,000 bracket of out-of-pocket expenses, but it can be as much as $10,000 to $12,000 depending on your doctor, your hospital.
Mm. Yeah, wow. So I guess along the way, in terms of out-of-pocket costs, you know, like I think the funnest thing when I look in it, because you're a first-time mother, I think the funnest thing that when I look into those situations is you get to, you know, decorate the nursery and actually, and I don't know if it's this, I don't know, physiological, I can't even speak, but this inside thing where I have to like have a nice place for my spawn. Or
you want a nest.
A nest. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. So
nest is easier to say.
Yeah. Thank you. So what did you spend on the nest? What did you do with the nest?
I was really specific about that. And it's funny that, I mean, I'm in my nest right now.
Yeah.
This is my rocking chair. You can see.
The throw.
The throw I actually already had, but there was a few things that I really wanted. Like I had a colour scheme in mind. Like I wanted some really nice sort of sheets for the cot. I wanted some artwork. I wanted some plants. But I knew that sort of stuff probably lasts. So I was happy to spend money on that. And then I went secondhand with pretty much all the furniture. And so all in all, I probably spent maybe $1,000 kitting out the room.
It's pretty good.
And it was really quite skewed, you know, like that 300 of that was on artwork. Yeah. And then 300 really covered all the secondhand furniture.
comes back to your priorities and what you appreciate exactly. In life, doesn't it? Like, yeah. And you've got 9 months to think about these things at least, but you've obviously prepared much longer than that. But again, highest values in your life, you prioritize.
And I think it's important to note as well, like when I, you know, I used to talk a lot about financially preparing for having a baby, and people go, oh, you can never have a baby, you're a guy, or, you know, you'll never know, you haven't had a child. But I think I can talk to financially preparing for an event.
Yeah.
So whatever that event is, you need a framework to prepare for that event. And I would always say, if it was building a house or buying a new car or going overseas or having a baby, it's still a significant event. The problem is the bloody baby, just the fees and the costs keep going up
forever.
But I guess initially my unsolicited advice would be if money is tight, I think you need to choose one premium item that's your thing if you're going to make the splurge.
Yeah.
So if
can't have it all.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and
possibly a little bit like weddings. We have maybe an idea in our mind what it's going to look like, and then the time rolls around, and you go, "Oh, holy crap! That costs money, and that costs money, and that costs money, and that costs money," and you have to start making trade-offs.
Yeah, the good thing about the event, as you call it, like whether it's birth or wedding or honeymoon, running a marathon, there's a finite period that you can prepare for, and it actually gives you greater motivation or reason to actually save that money and put it aside. Whereas if you're just sort of dwindling through life with no real purpose, it can easily go by the wayside.
I think the most productive times in my life have been the 2 days before I've had to fly overseas and get a lot of stuff done.
Yeah.
So it's like
you've got deadlines, haven't you?
This is deadline. Yeah. But I'll share an example. Good friends of the podcast, Chris and Beth Gleason, they've just had twins, which is just another, I don't know how people do it, but they do it. You know, it was important for them to have a pram that had the two babies, the doubles, but also that they could easily unclick and click into the car.
Yes.
And so that was a real premium item that I know the pram they were looking at, I think it was around $3,000, but they got it on Gumtree for $1,000 secondhand. So it was still premium, but it was probably, if you look at items in their journey, it might have been the most expensive once-off cost.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, and I want to backtrack a bit, and it might be going off topic touch, Beck, but the private versus public, like we've got three kids, we've had three events. the first one was actually public system with midwife, and then the second was private. And I would argue, and my wife would back me up, that the second experience was a much better one. Have you got any? Obviously, you've only got the one experience, but what would you say to the listeners on that?
We live in Australia. Most of your listeners live in Australia, and there's an amazing public health system here. And for the vast majority of people, the public health system is fantastic.
Mm.
There's an element of preference that may come in. Some people have that preference towards continuity of care, and maybe it's the length of stay. Perhaps it's a specific hospital that they would like to deliver in. For myself, given my anxiety after experiencing a miscarriage, that continuity of care was very, very important, and sure. I happily paid the premium to do so. But other people with different backgrounds leading into it might be less fussed.
Yeah.
And in which case, paying $5,000-$10,000 extra for that, if they don't value that experience, it's not good money.
Yeah.
No, and it's a luxury.
Yeah.
And like you said, like we live in Australia, like my sister, her first child, Grace, went private.
Yeah.
The second, when she had the twins, she actually went public, because the twins, they had twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome, so they were delivered at 26 weeks, which is just freaky. But I guess the underlying thing in Australia, if you are public, the level of care is still, like she was probably seeing the specialist that Beck was paying for anyway. Mm. So I don't think it's an issue of care, but it just goes back to those soft costs, Beck, of the soft factors of I wanted this experience because of these reasons.
Yeah, and that baseline is so important to consider, that we're not talking about, you know, oh, that means you get substandard care, because it's the all the other factors.
Yeah. So what you're basically saying in the total factoring of finances for that birth, maybe 60-odd percent of that was taken up by private health. Is that fair?
Yep, health and the private health and health-related, like pregnancy-related costs. So I would say the overall expenses get split into two categories, being the pregnancy and my well-being and what I call startup capital for the baby.
Yeah. So just like, and if you want to have a look at the blog, everyone, it's really cool. Like Beck has gone narrow and deep with costs. Like I've just pulled up month four was a light cost. You had a dermatologist at $245. Month five, you did some Pilates sessions, private sessions, $650. Had an ultrasound, $365. And you spent $8 at a pharmacy. Month six, starting to get a bit palpitations in my heart. The obstetrician cost was...
You are.
Yeah, I am. Obstetrician was $2,000. And you bought a bassinet from Marketplace for $80 and a cot mattress and some change table from Marketplace for $300.
Yeah,
and cool. I guess what that speaks to is, yes, you might be thinking, oh, Beck, she's so lucky she had the money.
Mm.
Well, she was still smart.
Yeah.
And she was still wise because she said, private care is my one thing, where for Chris and Beth, the one thing for them was maybe the good quality pram.
Yeah.
But you've been smart with your Marketplace secondhand stuff.
That's right. It wasn't just all straight to Baby Buntings or whatever it is to buy everything brand new and look at me sort of thing, was it?
Yeah.
I think the nature of baby expenses, even more so than when your family sort of grows into children more so than babies, is a lot of the things that you use are very short term in nature. And so there's an incredible secondary marketplace that exists for furniture, prams, clothing, anything that you could poke a stick at. There will be somebody who's selling it that has used it once, not at all, or a handful of times.
Yeah.
And then you will pass on your stuff to friends or on-sell it. So it is really worth thinking. I think it's one of the best ways to actually save, so you've got money to spend on what you really value.
Yeah.
At secondhand marketplace.
And for those listening, like, we may have overlooked one important thing. What's Bub's name? How old is Bub now?
There's probably a few things we've
Yeah, because we like number of height, weight, location, latitude, longitude.
My son he's 9 months old now. His name is Jeffrey.
Nice. Beautiful. I've got a Jeffrey.
Have you?
Yeah. Jeffrey and James, the twins.
Oh,
yeah.
I was going to say, I thought you had kids.
Nope.
Something I didn't know. Yeah, so plans
You're the
for...
first person I've come across be under the age of like 40 who knows a Jeff.
Well, thing was...
you want to say go to sleep, Jeff?
My sister's husband, his name's Jeff. His dad's name's Jeff. So the two names, Jeffrey and James, run in their family. So our twins are Jeffrey and James.
Yeah.
So... Yeah,
it's there you go.
A bit wild.
Bit of trivia.
Talk to us about.
are you having a second or third, Beck, or are you done with one?
You know, I'd like to go again at some point, God willing.
Yeah, because that first one I find is the grand final. It's the first one. It's special. It's the whole
2017 premiership. I get it.
Yeah. Whereas, no disrespect to my last two, but the third one's born on in the laundry and you would go to work the next day. No, it's not that bad, but I think it's it's a big event, isn't it? But the second time around hopefully is not as stressful because you've been through the process once before.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting looking at how I spent money the first time and working out what would be required to go again. And a lot of the expenses were skewed towards medical rather than the staff, it's probably still, instead of 17 and a half, it's probably about 12 that would be required. But also this experience has taught me, and my work has taught me, that nothing is a given. And so actually embedding enough financial buffer in there to deal with curveballs along the way, whether it's fertility issues, experiencing loss. Oh no, it's my second pregnancy. My back's lost the plot this time around. Mm. Whatever it might be, relationship counseling, having extra fat in the buffer is going to be really important the next time around.
Yeah, and I think like we all go through different stuff. We will all have our one thing. Mm. So if it's like you said, I saw in your thing that you had Pilates every couple of months, well, almost weekly by the looks of it, where someone else might not need that. So maybe your thing was, I've got to pay for this because of this issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So realistic.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing that I sort of did experience and I do really advocate for is investing in your mental health through that process. And it's not in this report because it happened postpartum, but I put in a good couple of $100 into some counselling to sort of debrief from my experience, and recognising that that was just as an important part of my recovery as, you know, looking after my pelvic floor or the stitches from my cesarean.
Yeah. And like definitely in those early years of childhood, motherhood is such a selfless existence, isn't it? So you're giving to this this other person in your life. So
cutting the life out of you.
Yeah. So to lead in with some enjoyment and pamper yourself mentally or physically is really important, isn't it?
Yeah. But I challenge that a little bit, John, because there's the pampering, which I fully support. And I feel like that's almost the cliche of, oh, you're pregnant, I'll get you a massage voucher. But there's also the survival element when whether you're heavily pregnant or you've got a new bub at home around, whether it's like food delivery or a women's health physio or things that you actually need to get by before you start considering those real pampering things, which are also.
Yeah, interesting. Mm. Well, there you go. Get Amy a next time around. Get Amy some, maybe let's, cook for once.
Let's cut that comment short. There's no next time around, okay?
Have you, were you a guest on Hannah's podcast under surgical contraception? Were you?
Yes, we have taken measures, Glenn, if you'd like to know, and everyone listening today, thank you.
So it's on your, and I would encourage anyone interesting to, you know, if you want to have a look at Beck's blog, and the link will be in the show notes, like she's detailed from like vitamins, from getting some Mylanta at the pharmacy, a rocking chair. Look, there is so much stuff here, sheets, reusable wipes. It's quite comprehensive. And I guess I would kind of think if we put our financial advisor hat on, well, I'll put my ex-financial advisor hat on because I can't go around saying I'm a financial advisor because I'm not. But what would you say to people before they go down this journey in terms of their own personal finance to get in the best shape, ready to go financially?
There's a few things that I would say to people. Articulate what the goal is. You know, yes, the goal is to have a family, but really what does that mean for you? And what does it mean from a health perspective? Perhaps what does it mean for you and your partner, your work, whole host of factors there. But get your house in order. So that means clearing any crappy debt or significantly reducing it, having a cash buffer that's not your buffer for the baby, and then saving for this purpose. Because what we're talking about here is the money I spent pregnancy and, you know, within a couple of weeks postpartum. That doesn't factor in then the money that I had to utilize or my family had to utilize to fund a parental leave period. And it doesn't talk about then the cost of actually raising a child. So this is just actually one element of this. And so if this is your goal, that's fabulous, but you can't just go have sex and think that like we're done.
Right,
because it just doesn't, it doesn't work that way, even if you're lucky enough to conceive that way, which a lot of people aren't. So thinking about things, being diligent, means that then when you get to that point, you can have sex and it's fabulous. But we need to put in the work here.
Yeah. No, it's a really important point there, Beck. I think that factoring in being on one or one and a half wages for 12 months, 2 years, sometimes longer, is underrated, isn't it? And looking at your cost to exist and then saying, well, hang on a minute, we're actually losing money each month here. Where are we going to get this money from to survive?
Yeah, doing the numbers is so important so you can make a really informed decision, whether it's saying, okay, instead of each of us taking 6 months off, it's actually 3 months, but then you can return part-time, or it's, all right, I'm going to take these 6 months off work, then you're going to take this 3 months off work because that takes advantage of your parental leave policy, like whatever it is, but you've got to do the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I just put some stuff in the Facebook group before we jumped on and just got anyone's questions or comments. And Jessica Rathamund, if that's how I pronounce it, Jess, the biggest cost to her was the loss of income itself.
Yeah.
So I guess what I would, again, with my strategic financial planning kind of hat on, I would probably say, you know, there's a lot of people that have personal debt that are trying to clean up their mess. Mm. My own view is, you know, if you can get a bit of a plan together, make sure you're on a budget, you're dialed in, maybe depending on your age and your medical factors, if you can say, look, we're going to be debt-free in 18 months to 2 years, let's get our debt cleaned up, then we can fall pregnant.
Mm.
I'm thinking if you're in a horrendous amount of debt and it can't be cleaned up within 2 years, well, obviously not going to put off a family for 8 years. So what can you do on the debt scenario? And then I'd probably say as well, with like a lot of people use the Glenn James spending plan and they'll do their spending plan and then copy the spreadsheet, open another file or whatever they do, and then use that one as the target spreadsheet. Well, what does this look like if we did a budget post-baby with mum off work for 2 months, 3 months, and then back to, or whatever that looks like, and you can start to manipulate some numbers, because if you are getting to the point where one will take a year or two off from the workforce, how can we start to live on one income as soon as possible?
Yeah. Comes back to goals, doesn't it? I think, like, if it's not planned pregnancy, you've basically got less than 12 months to get your shit in order, right? If you have got some goals ahead of you and sounds like you structured it pretty well, Beck, in the sense that you a fair way out, you started saving for this event and by the time it came along, you were ready. But then post that period, talk to us about your work situation and did you sit down with your husband and say, look, I want to go back to work in 6 months or 9 months, or I can work from home because I run my own business, or like, because my feelings are that you only get that time once in your life. So can we make it work that we spend 12 months at home with Bubs? And how does that look financially?
Yeah, and it really speaks to the personal preferences of the individuals and you as an individual, as a couple and as a family, because they've all got slightly different dynamics. For myself, my work's really important to me and I was really excited to go back to work. So I returned to work when my little guy was 4.5 months.
Yeah.
But I also said I would like to work part-time for the foreseeable future. Yeah. So instead of taking a year off being there all the time, I said I'm going to be here most of the time for a while.
Yeah, so that's your balance.
Part of that process also was really challenging some of the social norms. And there's probably a little bit of a chip on my shoulder around this, but the social norms are woman takes 12 months off, man takes a week or 2 weeks off. And you know, I really recommend for listeners, if they haven't already, to read Annabelle Crabb's Men at Work, which really challenges the social and political systems around parental leave in Australia and in New Zealand. But yeah, thinking about those dynamics and what's important and then doing the numbers to cross-check it and go, yeah, how does this stack up? And that really contributed to our decision-making around this.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, just because you gave birth doesn't mean you're the one that has to look after it in the first 12 months.
Yeah, and
and for a lot of families it doesn't economically make sense because, you know, gone are the days where man earns all the money and, you know, that doesn't happen for a lot of couples anymore. Yeah. And so, but even if it did, if that's not what you want, let's ask the question around that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would just encourage anyone that, like, I love how you talked about those social norms. As far as my life goes with social norms, I don't give a crap. I'm doing what I want.
Mm.
And if anyone has a problem with it, well, good for them. But I'm doing this. And then that speaks to who are you surrounding yourself with? You know, if your parents or your friends are travel agents for guilt trips, well, you need to get some new friends. I stole that from Dave Ramsey.
That's a good one, Dave. Yeah. But I think there's organic social pressure that people put on themselves.
Another one he says was my mother-in-law's a test pilot for the broom factory or something like that. Anyway, so but I think it does speak to the positive relationships in your life.
Mm.
Like you don't want to you don't want somebody, regardless of whether you're expecting a child or not, to be questioning your every decision because you're not doing it their way. It's like, get stuffed.
No. But
no, and it does also speak, Glenn, I think, to how you want to raise your child or your family. And like it or not, money forms part of that conversation.
Mm.
And so, you know, it may, like you said before, if you're buried under a big pile of debt right now, you know, you may have wanted to have a child by 28, but if doing so means that you can't give that child what you want to, then is it not worth waiting a couple of years until you're in a stronger financial position?
Mm,
yeah.
Or whether it's the house or the ability to give them education or whatever it is, or just the ability for one or both parents to be more present, money flows through this conversation. We have to think about it. We have to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's not just falling pregnant. It's not just giving birth. And it's not just that period before, you know, someone returns to work. Carries on.
Yeah.
It flows. Yeah.
I want to go to the Facebook group and just read some questions and comments. Kerry says, don't waste money on $2,000 prams to keep up with the Joneses and don't rely on any money from the government. That's an interesting one as well, because, you know, I know the family tax benefit, I think the threshold is 80K for families. So, you know, if you are on a lower income, there might be some safety nets and catch-alls there. But can you, again, go, look, we're doing this and what we receive from the government is just a bonus and we're not taking it for granted, just from a mindset thing?
Mm.
Yeah, and, I mean, to share my experience with this, I was able to qualify for the paid parental leave, but I actually returned to work before the money came through.
Oh, wow.
There was some issues. Centrelink and blah, blah. Like, I'm sure anyone who's ever interacted with Centrelink says, say no more, Rebecca. So essentially I self-funded that entire period and then the payment just topped me back up. So I think that's a really valid point. There are really great safety nets that exist through the Australian system, but you can't rely on them from a timing perspective.
No.
Yeah, and for those wondering, the parental leave is currently $753.90 per week before tax, and it's based on the weekly rate of the national minimum wage.
Mm.
So that goes for 18 weeks, and it basically can go directly to you or via your employer. And I'm just reading here, your partner may also be eligible for dad and partner pay.
That's right.
Which is basically a payment for up to 2 weeks. So income threshold.
I think that speaks a lot for the work that the Australian system still needs to
do. Yeah, that's right.
Totally. It almost, and that's the income thresholds are there, 150K. And the good thing is, you know, the Services Australia websites, they've got, the one thing they are, they're really clear and easy to understand. I'll give the government that. But I think, to your point, Beck, like, it should be, we're paying X amount per family for this long, whether both of you go back to work full-time or not. Like, who cares? Like, let's just help.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Like the plasma TV bonus that used to be around.
Yeah. So I'm just going to go back to Facebook. Christy asks, and we did cover it slightly, but I just want to dig down a little bit deep. Please talk about private health and pregnancy cover. I'm so confused about this and it would be great to understand some more. So I guess, Beck, if a private health insurance for you and your husband was $2,500 a year, I would imagine you could select pregnancy cover or not. And like just off the top of your head, I've given you this without notice, like what is the differences in having the pregnancy portion in the cover?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And there'll be countless people out there that have private health insurance that aren't covered for a pregnancy. And so pregnancy is almost always the top tier of cover. And that's also because, you know, not everyone needs it and not everyone needs it at all points in time. And so it is worth checking, do you already have it? If you're getting it for $2,500 in your example, it's an absolute steal. Good for you.
Yeah, I think mine's closer to $2,000 for myself. So.
Yeah, thinking that's cheap.
Yeah.
You will have you'll have waiting periods, and it's generally 12 months, but the 12 months is from when you install that cover to when you deliver your baby. So right. It's not about pregnancy or conception. It's actually around delivery. So I generally say as a, you know, good rule of thumb to wait at least 4 months between when you upgrade your cover and when you start trying, just to factor in that baby might come early.
Yeah. There could be some medical dramas or, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good tip. That's actually a really valid point, that 12-month waiting period. And you can upgrade to shorten that?
Yeah, most insurers will have some provisions around like emergencies. So if you have like an extreme premature baby, yep, that's a different case. But yeah, you would argue to be on the more conservative side. But likewise, if you were only on that level of hospital cover for the pregnancy services, it was one of the first things I did after my son was born was downgrade my cover and backdate it to the day that he was born, because I was like, I don't need this. And it's, you know, it was about an extra $200 a month to upgrade the cover to get to that level. So we talk about the cost of the private road before. It's not just that $8,000 out of pocket, it's that increased cost every month along the way. And so it is a lever to push and pull. But then again, thinking if you're going to have subsequent children, make sure you've served those waiting periods again. But some private health will include support for, say, IVF or fertility support. So, again, you might need to be on that for a longer period of time.
Yeah, it's interesting. Another comment in the Facebook group from Amy Rankin, who she's got a podcast called Nourishing Amy, I believe it's called. She's a friend of the show and actually lives on the Central Coast. She's pregnant at the moment. She basically said, I have private health with pregnancy cover, and they still say the average out-of-pocket cost still ends up being around $8,500, which is exactly what Beck said. So
it is, yeah. Can't be sneezed at.
Private health is a luxury, and if you don't want to have it, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
Your child will still be taken care of and healthy.
That's right.
And that's all good. I'm just going to read here. There was a comment here from Catherine Healy. No kids yet, but planning. We're currently practicing living off one wage so we can avoid as much shock as possible when her wage disappears, saving as much of my pay as possible to have a baby buffer. So that's a good point there as well, isn't it?
Good to practice before you have kids, isn't it?
It is. Mm. And I would say,
and it meaning that they'll be able to be saving an absolute bucket load between now and it happens.
Yeah. I want to talk as well, like if you are planning to start a family, I think it's so important to factor in your death, disability and income protection insurances now into the budget, because it's just then one less thing to do once Bub arrives. And we want to make sure, like I'm sure Beck and her husband both have death cover on each other. So if the worst case did happen to one of the parents, the surviving parent could be a full-time parent debt-free for a number of years if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is worth considering as well, particularly for women for income protection. They get to a point where during pregnancy where a lot of insurers will say, look, you're heavily pregnant. We won't insure you right now. Come back once you've delivered your baby and gotten through that experience healthily. So it is worth considering that, getting it organized sooner rather than later. And whilst we're talking about being really prudent as well, ladies, gentlemen, have a conversation with each other about super, because if one person is taken in an extended period of time out of the workforce or any period of time out of the workforce, that has an impact on your super and then will compound over the rest of your life. So you can have a conversation about how you can actually address that so that one member of the family, which statistically is more often the mother, doesn't get smacked in the face by in more ways than one.
Yeah, and some low-hanging fruit there. The one, it could be a personal $1,000 contribution that would attract the government co-contribution of $500. Mm. So then that's $1,500 for that year. And then if the spouse puts $3,000 in, they will get the $500 tax offset. But there are thresholds, and we won't get into it now, but effectively it works out. If the if you put $4,000 into the super fund in 1 year, the government will put $500 in of that money. The primary income earner at the time will get a tax offset. So it works out that the non-working spouse probably has, you know, $4,500 put into super in that year, which might be the normal super contributions of a 50, 60 grand income anyway.
Mm. Yeah. So, Beck,
does that sound about right? I'm talking to the financial advisor.
Well,
look, those contribution schemes are important, but also contribution splitting. So,
totally.
The conversation that I had with Mr. P was not, hey, honey, would you like to consider this? It was, hey,
split some of your contributions.
This is what we're doing because there is. Yeah, they're, like I said, there's a pretty substantial implication of not just the length of time that I was out of work, but also that we as a family have committed that I won't work full time for a number of years.
Yeah.
That's massive.
So just round off the loosely the contribution splitting with your spouse.
So in the most simplistic way, it's you call dibs on some of the money that their employer is paying into their super fund, and they can request to their super fund to say, hey, of that money coming in, I would like X percentage or X dollars of that to go to my spouse's account.
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's – we probably should do – spend some more time
on that. I wish more people
that.
Talked about this.
I was just thinking that. Oh, I haven't heard of that for a while. Like it's not a common topic at all.
Yeah, and it's an easy way if you don't have that spare, $4,000 floating around as well to contribute yourself to the lower income earners.
So can I just butt in? Beck, there may be some listeners out there that are self-employed about to enter this period of their life. Any tips and tricks for them? Because obviously – usually they're trading time for money, and if they don't turn up, they don't get paid. Very different to a wage as such from an employer. How would you attack that?
Look, it's tough. I wish that there was a really simple answer to that. I do have a number of clients or friends who are in this space who have also said it was one of the best things that happened to them because it forced them to get their business to a point that it could trade without them.
Yeah.
But also going, if this is important to you, then we just have to find a way to work through it, whether that is winding things down for a period and then winding them back up. You know, maybe you aren't going to be back on the tools 3 weeks after your child is born because you need to just be present to keep things going.
Yeah.
But it really speaks to that self-funded parental leave and the importance of having cash there so that if the money is not coming in and you are not relying on any paid parental leave or any sort of paid scheme, that you can self-fund it.
Yeah, good.
Jenny makes a really great comment. Jenny Bowdidge, sorry, I'm really bad at reading. You don't need to buy half the things you think you need for a newborn. They really don't need that much. Secondhand is a great option to keep the cost low, hiring items like a capsule. Biggest expense has been childcare and now things like swimming lessons. And what we probably should do, Beck, is have another, we might even book in and let's have a conversation with Beck in maybe 6 months' time.
The journey of
then,
Beck.
Yeah, and then the costs in another 12 months. And just to
let's just watch Jeffrey grow up and see.
I was going to say the journey of Beck and Jeff.
Amy McMahon said, also, I've had two kids in the public system and didn't pay a cent. Both times had a great experience and lovely midwives. Good way to save thousands. And that's just, again, we don't want to be, hear us loud and clear, everyone. We're not saying everyone go and get private health. I know doctors that will just go to public. So it's what your situation is, what you would prefer. Austin Powers once said, I would like a toilet seat made out of gold, but that's just not on the cards now, is it? So, you know, maths comes into it. If you're in your eyeballs to debt and you do want to start a family and it is going to be 3 or 4 years until you're out of debt and you can't wait, you will make do. You'll be fine. You'll be a great parent.
But also,
but these stories are important, and I think it's so great. And sometimes it can be confusing because you hear people say, "I swear by private," and then other people are like, "I had the most amazing experience public," and it can be confusing. But for me, it actually validates all the options that are on the table.
Yeah.
So whether it's a private midwife, it's private hospital with an obstetrician, public, a home birth, a birthing center. There are so many ways to bring your child into the world, and they all work brilliantly for different families.
Totally. Yeah. You've got to keep asking the right questions, don't you? And if there's ever a topic that all Australians are experts on, it's parenting, isn't it? You've always got the noise from the outside saying you should do this, you should do that. So if you can take little bits and pieces and then apply it to your own situation, good outcome.
Yeah, and I actually also, the final thing I'd add in there is for a lot of people it's risk management. I know that sounds probably a bit clinical in such a warm, happy conversation as families, but like for me, I really love the idea of a home birth, but I'm naturally quite risk averse and I can't overcome that idea of, but what if something goes wrong? And now that I had to have an emergency cesarean, like there's no chance that I will go down that home birth road because I can't shake that experience.
Yeah.
And so it's a risk management decision of what you're comfortable with to how you choose to proceed.
Yeah. Anthony Murdoch says, we have a 15-month-old. Changing to a single income was the most expensive part of it. We made sure we could live off my wage early. And jump in the Facebook group, everyone, and just search a keyword, cost of having your first child, search that keyword. But I will say, it's like, I can't stress enough just by reading these comments and dealing with, you know, hundreds of my previous clients that were going down this road, whatever situation in life, and we talked about the baby just being another goal or another event, whatever situation you're in, if you are living week on week, eyeballs in debt, and not having a good system in place, any event that you want to plan for, or even unplanned events, they're going to be harder than if you were planned, if you were considered, if you did have your emergency fund, if you did have your spending plan, if you didn't use Afterpay for the new lounge, because now Freedom do Afterpay. I'm just making that up. I don't know if they do, but they probably do. I guess I might leave it there, Beck. But if the group in Facebook, or anyone, if you're listening to this episode, send us an Instagram message, please. And what I might do is I might ask Beck if maybe we could organize maybe like a webinar one evening, Beck, and we can just do a Q&A about these costs, just so we can really nail it in.
Totally. And then so important.
I can do a webinar with Beck and we can just do a Q&A and Beck can answer questions. Because it is these topics, I know, like I listen to podcasts and so many times, like I might listen to the Joe Rogan podcast and then this guy on there talking about guns in Australia and I was like, no, you got no freaking idea. You're not here. Like, so you're listening to this podcast going, Glenn and John and Beck, you got no idea because of this. It is more of a conversation, and we probably can't do the conversation on a podcast, but perhaps if we did a live webinar where we could do some interactive questions and upvote, that'd be most fun.
For those who aren't watching on YouTube and just listening to us, Glenn's watching a video of himself.
No, I'm not. I've just got Facebook open and there's the welcome video there is on repeat. So any final words, Beck?
Having a family is, and I'm not a fan of the word should, but it should be a really beautiful and wonderful time. Having a family is also incredibly stressful and nerve-wracking and full of anxiety. And if you can remove financial worry or financial stress from that equation, there is more than enough things to worry about when it comes to bringing your first child into the world. So if you can be diligent, if you can be forward-thinking, you can be organized, it is possible to cruise through pregnancy and bring your child into the world without worrying about money.
Great. That's great advice. And it just speaks to every event that we ever go through in life, isn't it? Whether it be weddings, honeymoons, funerals, births, like the financial stress compounded with everything else that you're going through at that time just compounds the whole experience, doesn't it?
Do you have any other final comments before we go to
that was it?
Yep. Good. I was gonna say, but I thought I'd be polite. Yep. I guess my final comments are, from a practicality point of view, speak to your financial advisor, do a clarity call with John, and just, it might be like, okay, during this 12-month window, mum or dad, whoever it is, wants to stay at home full time. That's all good. Can we be strategic? Can we just, and I don't want to slap every sacred cow. I don't mind being strategic temporarily. So I'll just say that first. So temporarily, if you've got a plan, can we just put the mortgage repayments to interest only for 12 months? Can we just not contribute extra to super for the first 12 months?
Yeah, you just got purpose.
Can we put this on minimum or cut down? And I say that with caution, because we have to be strategic and have a plan. So in 12 months' time, we have to turn those things back on.
Yeah, that's right. It's not a headline on the Daily Telegraph saying Glenn doesn't subscribe to super or interest-only loans or whatever, but it's just having that purpose for that period of time to get yourself through.
You can be strategic, but it's not forever. And that's why I'm cautioned to say that. It's like, oh, don't worry about your super. No, it's very important.
Mm.
But if the cash flow means that we want a short-term trade-off of staying at home longer, and we know that we will go back to work, and we know this will actually get back to...
Yeah.
So, and it could be like, chat to your financial advisor. It could be if you're paying for death cover in your own name, well, maybe that can go in the super fund to then the super fund can claim it on tax and it frees up cash flow. Mm. And that's why it's so important to be engaged with a third party who's in your corner, who you can bounce stuff off to keep you accountable.
Totally.
Is that a fair comment, Beck, or are you going to crucify me?
There is no crucifixion going on here. Yes. It's being organized. You know, my husband and I, we feel weird right now that we haven't been investing or saving anywhere near as much as we used to. And in some regards, things just got turned off. But we recognize that this is a season.
Yeah.
This is not what our life looks like indefinitely. We've done the hard work prior to this period of our lives that we can now do this, and it's okay.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, Beck, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. We will try and see if the group, because there's been, in the short couple of minutes that I put the Facebook post up, there was over 100 comments. So there is so much in there. So I think we can really help the community. You can find Beck on Instagram at
RF Pritch or at RebeccaPritchard.com.au. Thanks for having me.
No worries. We'll be in touch. Beck. See you. Bye.
All right. You asked for it. I didn't want to do it, but you asked for it. You kept saying week after week, Asher, you got to tell the people. And I said, okay, fine. Give me that 10 grand pay rise and I'll do it. It is the My Millennial Money Community Member of the Week.
Okay, Monique, you are up. Monique, Community Member of the Week. Monique is 33, lives in the Gong. And for those not near the Gong, that's Wollongong.
Wollongong.
She's a part-time admin officer / part-time stay-at-home mum. So she would have probably had a few things to comment about that episode.
Yes.
The financial goal is saving for a family holiday to the US of holiday.
She's got another 3 years to save.
Well, that's good, isn't it? So we've pushed that like target out a bit and contributing more to super. So that's pretty good. So all I would say, the financial goal on the super thing, how can you put that goal into action? So instead of this arrival of we're saving money to put super, we get to the goal. I would like to get to the goal where I can put $50 a week in or $20 or whatever that is. So rather than, but I'm sure she means that.
Cool.
She's achieving this goal, and I should read before I talk, but she's sticking to an allocated weekly amount to spend, and she is salary sacrificing.
Yeah.
So maybe she wants to turn that up more. So that's awesome. And the silliest money mistake that Monique has made, probably not making the most of our pre-kids full-time incomes and investing in our 20s.
That's so common, huh?
Yeah.
So common. And if you can just speak to your 40-year-old self when you're 20, just get it done now.
Yeah, love that. All right, everyone, thanks for hanging around. A bit of a longer episode today, but I hope that encouraged you. I will try and see if there is enough groundswell to do a maybe expecting our first baby and money live webinar with Beck, because I think these topics do need more of a campfire chat rather than three people just chatting and talking at people.
Yeah.
So again, if you've listened to the podcast for a long time, thanks for staying around. If you're a new listener, I apologize. But thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, John. Thank you to Nate in the studio here.
Thanks,
and we'll see you guys soon.
Bye. Bye.
If you're after personal financial advice, this podcast is not for you. But if you do want a financial advisor or mortgage broker to talk with about your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'll put you in touch with one of our trusted professionals.
This podcast supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you want some other giving options, or if you are unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
If you're looking for a super fund that puts its members' interests above all else, choose a super performer, Sun Super. With low fees, strong investment returns, and great member services, Sun Super is Super Ratings 2020 Fund of the Year and has also been awarded by Money Magazine, Canstar, and Finder. Find out more at sunsuper.com.au/M3. You can join Sun Super online in under 5 minutes. Thanks to Jess Knaus, producer, Nathan Robertson, editor, and me, Asher. Anyway, make sure you're connected via Instagram and our free Facebook group. We also film most of our content now, so check out My Millennial Money on YouTube.